It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Most Americans agree that racism is a serious problem in our society. But if the majority of Americans believe it's a problem, why does it persist? Well, maybe that's because we don't really understand what's going on. The film I'm Not Racist, Am I?, which will be shown on Thursday evening at 6 p.m. at Roosevelt High School in Des Moines, follows a diverse group of high school students in New York City. They come together to talk about and try to understand racism.
I feel like the majority of whites don't experience racism because they live in their neighborhoods where it's like predominantly white, and they know that they don't treat blacks wrong, and they know that they haven't seen anybody treat blacks wrong, so they feel like it doesn't exist and it's just like a figment of like your imagination, like you keep holding on to the past.
Like the stereotypes about white people that we are like generally like focused on are all funny. Like white people can't dance. That's not something people really care about. You're not gonna judge a person because they can't dance.
I think the privileges that white people have is that, first of all, they have role models. They have people that they see that are, that can become successful.
That's just a moment from the film, I'm Not a Racist, Am I? The film is being shown at Roosevelt High School in the hopes of starting similar conversations among students and community members in Des Moines. And with me now is the director of the film, Catherine Wigginton Green of Point Made Films. Hello, Catherine.
Hi, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here. And give us an idea of the concept for the film. You brought these students together and they went through a variety of different workshops to try to really hash out what racism is.
Right. So we, you know, what I have noticed over the years, and as you said earlier in your introduction, that, you know, I think a lot of people agree that we still have unfinished business when it comes to race and racism in the United States. And I hear on, you know, television and, you know, movies and the radio and mainstream media, we hear the word racist and racism thrown around a lot, or people say others are playing the race card. So we use that terminology all the time. And what I've found is that we don't always quite know what we're talking about. And so if we don't actually have a sense of what it is that we're trying to interrupt and address, then we're going to keep spinning our wheels and not really make any progress or make real change. And so with this project, the idea was to really bring together a group of young people who were curious about race and racism, had lived experiences with it, and seen a social structure all around them that they had never really had a chance to put sense to, and didn't really understand how we got to where we are. And they went through a series of workshops through the course of a school year, and we filmed them in those workshops. And then we filmed them coming home and talking about what they were learning with their family members and with each other, and just trying to make sense of it all. And that's the journey that we have in the film.
And one of the places you start with these students is really at the very beginning, the definition of racism. And I was really struck by the fact that the understanding that the students, even students who had experienced racism personally, the understanding of what racism is was not necessarily very fleshed out. Like a lot of these students weren't able to define it. Why do you think it's so important to come up with a definition?
Well, you know, I think when the students in the film were trying to define racism, when I first, you know, met with all of them, I had spoken with each of them for about 2 hours about their perspectives on race and racism, some of them with their personal lived experiences with race and racism. And then when we asked what it actually is, you can see in the film how they stumble. And I found that across the board. And we are all, I believe, most of us sort of trained to think of racism only as individual actions and thoughts and beliefs. So if I don't have bad thoughts about someone of another race, I'm a good person, then I'm not racist, and my work here is done. And that obviously is not working. That one of the main points of the film is that we're really trying to understand that racism is bigger than just what's between you and me, what's going on with individuals. And students did not have a chance to talk about that. And what we found is that a lot of their parents weren't either. And so even if they were in homes where they were experiencing racism and talking about race, they weren't necessarily talking about the systems of oppression that we have in this country and how things were set up as a way to keep people of color marginalized and to really benefit white people.
And so the workshop leaders really made a point of drawing a line between personal meanness, was the phrase that was used a lot, or personal bias or bigotry, and racism as collective power. Explain that a little bit more for me.
Sure. So in the film, there's the People's Institute for Survival and Beyond is a group of organizers and activists and racial justice trainers who have been doing this work for quite a long time. And they put the kids through a workshop over the course of 3 days, and they really dig into so many different issues. So you see about a 10-minute montage of the workshop in the film. But we did try to hit the most salient points in the film to really show what stuck with the kids, and that was this way of defining racism and making a distinction between individual meanness and bigotry and systems of oppression. And so if we think of racism as the definition offered in the film is racial prejudice plus power equals racism, then we're really talking about who actually is benefiting from the way our different systems like healthcare and criminal justice and education are set up and who isn't. And what do we need to do to really dismantle the way these systems have been set up in a way that can bring more equity? And, you know, I often draw on a sort of a comparison with if we were to think of having an illness. So if I don't feel well and I have some kind of a sickness and I have daily symptoms that make me uncomfortable on a daily basis, I go to my doctor because I want her to address my symptoms and the everyday experiences I'm having. I want those to feel better. And I would like her to get at the root of what the problem is. And I believe racism is really the same way. So we have these individual interactions that don't feel good, and we have to do better in terms of how we interact with each other individually. And we need to think about what are we perpetuating on a bigger level than is just beyond the way we treat each other. And, you know, one of my favorite lines from the film, I've lots, but one of them is when one of the workshop leaders from the People's Institute, Justin, says, you know, he asks the students, who do you think of as racist? And they say, you know, they're kids, so they say things like, you know, old people and others. And they name individuals, sort of the typical people that we would think of as racist, right? And
rednecks,
he says,
the Ku Klux
Klan,
right?
Right, Republicans, all of that, right? They say all these things, and they're kids, right? They're just coming up with these things, these stereotypes. And he says, okay, let's ship them all off to outer space. Let's get rid of all these individuals that we think are the racists. And do we still have systems running in a way here that are going to be benefiting white people to the detriment of others? And it's a pretty strong point, I think, that really struck the kids. It struck us on the crew who were documenting the experience that we can still, this whole machine will still keep operating if we don't really look at the systems in addition to how we're treating one another.
And we have a little bit of sound from the film, part of this conversation, as the discussion leaders are leading the students through a discussion of who can be considered racist. And the first voice we hear here is Anna of Asian descent.
I don't think that racism is only white people being racist against, like, other, like, minorities. I think, like, minorities can be racist against, like, white people, too.
Are we talking about individual meanness or collective power? We would call that bigotry. We wouldn't call that racism. And we continue to change the idea of who is white, who gets into the club and who doesn't. And you know how we do it? We never define what white is. We just tell you whether you're not. We would also say that it's only white people that could be racist, that are racist, and that people of color cannot be.
Let me tell you what he's not saying on the second part. He's not saying that people of color can't be bigots, can't express racial prejudice, can't try to engage in acts of discrimination against white people, can't do real, real stupid things filled with hate. We're saying that collectively, blacks, Latinos, and other groups do not have the power to collectively oppress white people through the use of our systems.
Again, that's a moment from the film, I'm Not a Racist, Am I? And one of the students asked the question following this discussion, well, does that make all white people racist at some level? Where do you come out on that?
Right. So, well, a couple things. So they're trying to piece this together too, right, in that scene in the film, because this is all really new. You know, one of the things I do in screenings before I set up the film is I ask people to think about what their definition of racism is. And more often than not, people have this individual belief. So what's happening to the students often happens to people at the same time as they're watching this whole scene or when they go through the Undoing Racism workshop. And that's just turning all of this upside down because we're thinking about, well, no, it just means how we feel about each other. And when, often when I show the film, people hear that moment about all white people are racist, and it's really hard to hear. Because if we have been conditioned to think of racism as only our individual beliefs and actions, then it feels as if the workshop leaders are saying that those of us who are white, we all discriminate, we all hold bias, we're all bigots. And that's not what they're saying, really. And you know, Maurice follows up with that, but he says, Maurice is one of the other workshop leaders, they're not saying that people of color can't hold prejudice. It's that the way that systems are set up and who benefits from them are people who are white. And so I think another point, too, that I would make is that what I believe is telling is, I just noticed that you had referred to the film as, I'm not a racist, am I? And this happens all the time. It's actually, I'm not racist, am I? So sort of, you know, it's adjective versus noun kind of thing. And it seems minor, but it happens all the time. And I wonder, you know, we do often want to go to that a racist, that individual, versus how are we participating in a system that's racist and what can I do about that? It's something that is really challenging for people when they watch that scene of the film. And that's why we always have discussions after the film plays, because there's a lot to dig in there and to make sure that people are really thinking, not necessarily that someone's pointing a finger at people who are white, but really saying, please look at the way that you are operating within these systems. And can you be doing something to be anti-racist?
I'm talking with Catherine Wigginton Green of Point Made Films. She is the director of the film I'm Not Racist, Am I? It'll be shown on Thursday evening at Roosevelt High School in Des Moines, and we are going to continue our conversation in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Right now I'm talking with Catherine Wigginton Green of Point Made Films. She is the director of the film I'm Not Racist, Am I? It's going to be shown on Thursday evening at 6 o'clock at Roosevelt High School in Des Moines. And the film follows a diverse group of high school students in New York as they go through a series of workshops and conversations to really try to understand racism, what it means as a culture, what it means to them individually. And Catherine, one of the things that really struck me there were some conversations with the students about their friend groups and the people that they choose to spend time with. And one of the young men who was part of the conversation talked about how, well, all of his friends are white, but that's not because they chose each other on the basis of race. It's just coincidentally, because they all happen to be white. And we do see that in schools everywhere. There's a lot of self-segregation that goes on. What do you want these students to understand? What do you want all of us to understand about what that means and where that comes from?
Yes, that's such an interesting part of the film as well, you know. And the student that you're referring to is Sasha. And, you know, when he was talking about his friend group, it was fascinating because his mom was listening in the other room, and we talked with her afterwards after we did the interview, and we got some footage as well of Sasha and his mom talking. And, you know, they were exiled from South Africa. They came to New York from South Africa during apartheid, is when his mom came when she was young. And, you know, they really wanted to have this life in New York that was very diverse. And they made a choice to send Sasha to public schools. And you know, they were doing what they could to be in a community where he would be around lots of different kinds of kids and have these different friendships. And when she heard him say that we didn't mean for it to be this way, but we just kind of, that's what my friend group looks like, it was surprising to her. And it made them have some really interesting conversations about how that happened. Because what we found from the students, and I would say this is my own personal experience growing up as well, is that around the time of middle school, a lot of times those friendships do start to separate based on race. And you know, sometimes there's self-segregation, sometimes there's really a sense of congregating. So do certain groups of kids who are of similar backgrounds want to congregate together because it feels safer, depending on, you know, how they feel within the community that they're getting their education in. And so I think, you know, race seems to cloud so much of what we do in our interactions. And I think that, you know, what was really eye-opening for Sasha was, well, this probably didn't just accidentally happen this way, right? You know, there are certain schools that he went to, and his mom even makes the point in the film, you know, he's trying to say that there's really a level playing field in the U.S. because everyone has a chance at public education. And what he didn't quite realize, and his mom shed some light on for him, was that he was in one of the more elite public high schools in New York that you have to test into. And she made the point, well, you know, most of your friends who got into that school, their parents paid for tutors to get the scores on the test to be able to get into those schools. And so then it's not just necessarily what your friend group looks like. You know, it's looking at what's the overall school look like? What are the demographics like there? Because who's being admitted? And what in our education system led to that point, even before that, in terms of who's having the chance at education to get into the schools that are deemed, you know, higher ranking. So there's it's so complex, more than just who your friends are, right, and who you're hanging out with and having lunch with in the cafeteria.
As the students really began to understand the system of oppression and what this collective power means, some of the students of color had a really great question where they said, well, why would a white person care about this? I mean, why would a white person want to overturn a system that benefits them, which turned out to be a difficult question.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, when there's a scene in the film when two of the young women, Abby and Anna, are hanging out at Anna's house and they're talking about this and thinking, you know, why? I really want to know why the white students want to be there. And I'm thinking, you know, in the background, kind of listening, oh, man, I can't wait to hear all of them start talking about this. And the next time all the students were together at a workshop, the dialogue facilitator, Dr. Liza Toulousan, who led a great workshop with the kids, in this scene, and Anna and Abby raised that question of, you know, why are you here, to the white people? What are you doing this for? And then the whole conversation got derailed a little bit in terms of that question. I was so excited. I thought, okay, we're going to really dig into this. And then one of the other young women in the film was challenged by a student, who was Martha, was challenged by Terrence for some of the words and the terms she'd been using throughout the course of the school year. And then the conversation became about that, and they never really got to that central question of why are they there. And, you know, as the person who's documenting that experience and talking with the kids extensively throughout the process, I think they were still trying to figure that out, especially at the end. Not only why am I here, but then what do I do with this? And they've all, you know, followed very pretty incredible paths since the project ended in terms of what they've done in school and how they've kind of approached activism and participating in demonstrations and just really finding their voice around these things and making sense of it. And that's taken 4 years, you know, since we ended the project.
So you've continued to follow up with them.
Yes. And often they come to screenings and workshops with us when they can. And many of them have asked, when can we do it again? Because I would say that I think it's fair to say all of them, if maybe most of them, if not all of them, they felt as if they couldn't really go back from the experience. And Sasha even says it at the end, you know, I don't know, I can't even remember what I was like before this whole process started, you know, and Kalik even, who he's an incredible young man, and he had so much wisdom that he shared and so many personal emotional experiences that he shared in the film and was such a leader of the group. And he even said too, you know, this experience is like a trophy, having been able to do this. And what we found is that once they got a taste of that and made those connections and started to see this sort of matrix of how these systems are set up, you can't go back from that, and they just wanted to do even more.
I want to play another moment from the film. This is an activity that the students did to highlight the types of racial privilege in the room. And so the facilitator said, Take a step forward if you feel this statement applies to you, and read statements like, I can go shopping alone most of the time and feel certain that I won't be followed because of my race, or I can do well in a challenging situation without being called a credit to my race. I can get accepted to go to a school without anyone wondering if I got in because of affirmative action. I can turn on the TV and see people of my race portrayed positively. And there was this huge gap between the white kids and the black kids, and then there were a few people in between. And I want to play a moment from their conversation after they did the exercise.
So look around. Where are people at?
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Really? Okay.
So, hard feelings? I took no steps. Me and Terrence were sitting back here waiting for something that's applicable to us, but we didn't find anything, because everything that you said, like, we had, in some way, it was a negative thing for us, so.
And we had first-hand experience.
Okay. Ilya?
I thought just because you said it was gonna be, like, you know, benefits and stuff,
yeah.
I thought that I would've been, like, more up just because, even though I'm Hispanic, I'm a light-skinned Hispanic.
Yeah.
So, like, after hearing those questions, like, I still realized that I'm all the way back here still, no matter what.
Well, I took the most steps, and, I mean, I felt guilty, but
okay.
What kind of, there's no reason for him to feel guilty, like. Sasha's not the one who, like, put the systems in place.
Yeah.
Like, we're not gonna be like, screw you, Sasha. Like,
yeah, it's not his fault that we're hungry and
you shouldn't feel guilty that you have benefits.
Oh, say that again.
I said you shouldn't feel guilty that you have benefits.
Why do you say that?
Because I feel like everybody should have these benefits. So, like, you don't feel bad that you're given something. Feel bad that others aren't given it.
So that's just a moment of conversation after they went through that exercise. And I think that's something that a lot of people really have to reckon with, this feeling of guilt or being at fault if they happen to be white and benefit from this collective power in our society. And also, you know, if you don't benefit from that, the question of who's fault is this? I mean, that really gets to the crux of where so much conflict comes from.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And that scene is so amazing. It was such a great realization that they had. And I find that audiences who watch that scene, that's one of the moments they really want to talk about when the film ends, and just realizing, okay, you know, I mean, I'm not going to say there's not a place to feel guilty, because if people feel guilty or feel bad, then, you know, we need to feel that, right? And then what are we going to do with it? How can that guilt or that shame, how can that motivate us to try and do better, right? And make things better and bring about equity. You know, I thought about this the other day when I was upstairs in our house, and I came downstairs, and I have two young daughters, and they had made this big crazy mess in the living room. And I said, okay, we've got to clean this up. And each of them said, well, I didn't do it. I didn't do it. And I said, well, I didn't ask who did it, but I'm saying we need to clean it up because we want to have a nice living space. And it hit me when I was saying it to them that this is a lot of what I encounter on the road with the film, is that we feel as if we're being, those of us who are white feel as if we're being blamed, or people want to sort of talk about who takes ownership over it. Or I'll hear time and again people say, well, I didn't do this. Like, I didn't own slaves, you know, or I didn't set these systems up. And that's all true. And what does that really matter for what we're trying to do right now in terms of creating a more just and equitable society? What can we all be doing to do better? And how are those of us who might have more access to privilege and those systems that are working in a way that tend to benefit us more, what can we be doing to bring about more equity?
There will be a discussion following the film on Thursday, and I think I can assume that you're hoping that many viewers and many people who are listening to this interview will have these kinds of conversations about what race means in our society. Do you have some advice for people for how to do that? I mean, you had expert facilitators and a group of students that was at least thought that they were open to these kinds of conversations. Not everybody's going to have that kind of environment. How do you get started?
Yes, that's such a great question and point, that it doesn't always go that way. And we did. We were so lucky that we had, we were exposed to all these great facilitators. You know, before I started working on this project, I was that person who would want to pick fights, right? I wanted to win arguments and prove that, you know, I wasn't racist. And I wanted to be this very good white person who was doing my part. But that often became more about my identity as a good person versus actions I was taking. And it wasn't productive, the way that I was having these conversations. I'm not even sure I'd call them conversations. And oftentimes it was mostly with family. I think that with our family members, that tends to be who gets us the most riled up. But what I will say is that documenting this experience that these kids went through and talking with them and listening to them, and then being on the road for now 3 years with the film and hearing people interact with each other around the subject matter, I have just learned so much around having intellectual humility around these issues, that none of us knows everything. There's a lot to learn. There are experts out there, and we can learn from them, much like we would in other fields, for instance, climate change or other issues that are facing our nation, that there are people who are studying it, and we can listen, and we do have to have these conversations and think about what part we want to play. And so what I learned is that, you know, as a journalist and someone who's documenting this process, I was not there to teach the kids anything. I was there to watch them go through this process and ask questions that would help them think through their perspectives. And I've taken that same strategy into my conversations about race and racism with other people, where I ask questions and I listen and ask people if they're open to alternative perspectives. And I hear theirs as well. And that's, I think, for those who are starting out in terms of the analysis of racism and really becoming more aware, and those who want to make an impact and want to engage in those conversations, not everybody does. That's not everybody's path. But for those that do, I think we can do a lot to listen and really hear people out and understand that, you know, having a fight or trying to win an argument is actually not going to get us anywhere. But can we come to a deeper understanding with one another?
Catherine, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
Catherine Wigginton Green, she's director of the film I'm Not Racist, Am I? The film will be shown Thursday evening at 6 p.m. at Roosevelt High School in Des Moines. And Green will be part of the discussion following the film. With me now is Petra Lang. She's a member and founder of ARC, the Anti-Racism Collaborative of Des Moines. She's a special programs coordinator at Drake University School of Education and sponsor for CORE, Congress of Racial Equality. Hello, Petra.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much. Can I jump in real quickly with that CORE? It's actually Community of Racial Equity. It's a student-led group here in Des Moines.
Okay, thanks for correcting me. Let me ask you, you were instrumental in bringing the film to Iowa. Why did you feel it was important to do?
One of the things that we do in ARC of Des Moines is provide a lot of opportunities for folks in our community to join us in conversations around race and the history of race and how racism affects our lives. So when we saw an opportunity to bring this film in, we thought it would be a perfect way to engage not only community that we usually see at our events, but also with Des Moines Public Schools specifically. And excited to have those conversations with youth and teachers.
How do you feel this changes the conversation? Was that part of the goal, to have a different starting point?
We were hoping, actually, that this could engage different groups in the community. So we have, like, Drake University's Diversity Committee that's joined us, Plymouth Congregational, Des Moines Public Schools. And all of these folks are bringing different people together to have these conversations within their smaller communities and groups. So it seems as a good starting place for Des Moines to look at the same film, talk about some of these same issues, and then go back and continue those conversations.
Now, as somebody who has spent a lot of your career engaging in conversations about racial equality, what were you able to take away from this film that maybe helped you see things in a new light?
I loved the way that the youth engaged and struggled with these concepts. I thought it was a fantastic avenue to explore and look with fresh eyes on a lot of the concepts that frame discussions around race. I also thought the facilitators of those discussions were just remarkable. The way that they were able to phrase insights, to shed light on them in different ways, was tremendously insightful.
And how will educators in Des Moines be able to use this film? I mean, I know it's showing tomorrow evening, but there's more going on than just that.
Absolutely. There are specific resources that are provided to help further those dialogues in classrooms next year. We also know that Des Moines Public Schools is doing a concerted effort to engage in conversations around equity and cultural proficiency. So we hope that those will be supportive materials to, again, continue that dialogue.
Well, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We'll broaden the conversation in a moment. Petra Lang is with me. She is Special Programs Coordinator at Drake University School of Education. She was instrumental in bringing this film, I'm Not Racist, Am I, to Des Moines. It'll be shown tomorrow evening at 6 p.m. at Roosevelt High School in Des Moines, followed by a group discussion. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're having a conversation about racial equality, and it was spurred by the showing of a new documentary. It's called I'm Not Racist, Am I? And the film will be shown Thursday evening at Roosevelt High School in Des Moines at 6 p.m., followed by a discussion. And it's also going to be part of a curriculum used by teachers in Des Moines. This hour, we're going to try to broaden the conversation and talk more about racism and racial equality in Iowa. With me, Petra Lang. She is a founder and member of ARC, the Anti-Racism Collaborative of Des Moines, Special Programs Coordinator at Drake University School of Education, and sponsor for CORE, Community of Racial Equality. And I also want to bring a couple of other people into the conversation now. Jessica Welburn is here. She's Assistant Professor of Sociology and African American Studies at the University of Iowa. These are topics she has engaged with her students. Hello, Jessica.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And we've got a couple of high school students joining us as well. Delasia Nix is a senior at East High School in Des Moines. Hello, Delasia.
Hello.
Thank you for being here. And Nosa Ali is also here, a senior at Roosevelt High School in Des Moines. Hello, Nosa.
Hi, thanks for inviting me.
Well, thanks a lot for being here. And Delasia, I want to start with you, but I want this to be a group conversation because I know that this is something that everyone here has had a lot of experience with. But Delasia, you have been part of a lot of different conversations about race through your urban leadership class, which was at Central Campus in Des Moines. And I'd love to hear from you when, obviously, the students that enrolled in this class knew that this was going to be part of the class, something that they'd be talking about. But when you bring a group of high school students together in Iowa to talk about race and racial equality, what strikes you about those conversations?
Just the level of understanding everyone has, because it's so different between everyone. You don't really learn about a lot in high school, and I feel like in that class everybody has a different understanding of everything, and we kind of try to get on the same page for everything. So I think that was the biggest thing that struck me about that class.
Well, and when you were having those conversations in class, we just heard in the film they tried to do the same thing where they came to an understanding of what racism is. What definition did you take away from your class?
The biggest definition I took away was systematic oppression.
And that's also what they were talking about in the film. And Jessica, as a university instructor, as an assistant professor, you have taught classes on racial equality. And that definition of systematic oppression, I mean, that's not the definition that probably most of your students come into class with when they think about what racism is. Why do you think it's important to come to that understanding?
Yes, I teach several classes on racial inequality, and I really try in the classes to move students beyond individual stories, personal feelings, and opinions to talking about systems of oppression. So we talk about everything from residential segregation to mass incarceration to inequality in public education. And I think this is important because once you talk about these systems of oppression, you talk about the factors that created them, that maintain them, and the ways in which we can dismantle them, it becomes more difficult to deny the existence of persistent racism, right? So if we only talk about our own personal experiences, people get into, well, I didn't do this, or I didn't have this experience, or I haven't done this to so-and-so. But if we talk about these big picture issues and who's benefiting from systems of oppression and who is disadvantaged by them, it becomes more of a conversation about racial inequality in the U.S. as a reality, and then how we can, in our different capacities, work to, again, dismantle these systems of oppression.
Now, something that I've been struck by in my personal experience, and then also as a journalist, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, Nosa. Often, when people start to talk about racism, people in the room start kind of eyeing each other and wondering how people are looking at them and maybe getting kind of defensive. And Nosa, is that something that you've experienced?
Yeah, of course. It's definitely an uncomfortable conversation to have because it's not something that's, you know, in our curriculum or in our textbooks, or you don't learn to have those conversations. So when you start, it's a little bit awkward. I know, especially in my classes, I'm usually one of the only minority students. So bringing up the conversation, I usually want to bring up the conversation, but it's even awkward for me to do it because I don't know, you know, what the looks of everyone in the class is, and I don't know what to expect. So, yeah, of course, it's definitely uncomfortable.
Well, and do you find that maybe white students, for example, or friends of yours, do they get defensive?
I try not to go too deep into the conversation. Usually when we start with the conversation, it's kind of a little awkward, so we just kind of pretend like it never happened, which I'm trying to work a little bit better about continuing it, even though I may feel uncomfortable about it. Growing up, I did have majority white friends because I did go to a pretty white elementary school, and I always considered those feelings as, I internalized those feelings of racism, and I never really thought it was racism because my friends didn't experience it. So I thought it was just like me acting this way, and I never tried to share those feelings with them. So it's kind of hard now, especially, and we're not all close till this time, but
right.
Yeah.
Well, Delasia, I think I heard you take a deep breath there. You've had a lot of experiences talking about racism in your classes. Let's talk about how people might get defensive and how that changes the conversation.
I have had a lot of conversations. Offense has been taken. Definitely people get defensive, but I feel like being uncomfortable is where you need to be. I mean, especially with your friends. I feel as though I need to have those conversations with my friends so we are on the same page and the same level of understanding, because if you don't, then you're still separating yourselves to a certain degree in your friendship. And I feel like if I'm not able to talk about it with my white friends or who I'm hanging around, I feel like how can we really truly be friends? If we're not coming across the issue that is so big right now, then how can we solve it? How can they help me cope with things that happen to me if we're never having those conversations? And I feel like, yeah, it's going to be very uncomfortable, but at the same time, like, it needs to happen. And in that urban leadership class, it happens and you get that uncomfortable environment, but it's also such a safe space that you continuously talk about it and you work through those feelings with our teachers, with other students who are feeling the same way as you or even feeling differently. So I think that's like the biggest thing, is feeling uncomfortable and learning how to deal with that, but also conversate and talk through it.
Now, having been through that experience, what have you seen since you've taken that class among your friends, among fellow students? How do you think it impacted people?
Oh, man. I feel like I'm so much closer to a lot of people just due to the class and learning so much. Like, in the beginning, we're all on different pages and different levels of understanding. But at the same time, like, as we're learning through it and working through it, it's just, we're all trying to work towards something better. So I think with a lot of the students, we are just on that deeper level, and we've created such a great bond that we can talk about things.
Well, Petra, I'd love to hear your observations. Again, you've worked with many students having these conversations. What do you think the outcome can be of opening up conversations like this?
Most of those conversations that I have with my students at Drake University, those are pre-service teachers or grad students who are teachers now in Des Moines. And I think providing opportunities to have those conversations to help get through that discomfort in places that are relatively safe, allow people to be brave and enter into that discomfort, so that, because I really feel that that's something that we owe to our students. And so allowing pre-service teachers and teachers right now to practice talking about that and figuring out where they stand and what they believe, and really reflecting on how race has impacted their lives in a lot of different ways. I mean, we talk about education, but housing was also mentioned, justice system. So all of those systems have been impacted by how we construct race. And so having a chance for teachers to talk about that before we move into classrooms with students, I think helps us in our work.
Jessica, what do you think? I mean, talking with college students, a lot of the students that you've talked to probably haven't had these conversations in schools because this really hasn't been part of the curriculum in most schools. What do you think the outcome is?
Well, I think starting to have the conversations is important, in part because it's the first step to, again, dismantling systems of oppression. So I do research on how people of color deal with racism and discrimination, and I find, you know, as people of color, we spend, you know, time daily dealing with racism and discrimination or thinking about ways to combat racism and discrimination. But the important part about conversations like the one that's happening in Des Moines right now is that it engages the entire community and takes the burden away from people of color in terms of dealing with racism and discrimination and dismantling systems of oppression. Again, a lot of these conversations often fall within minority communities, and majority groups don't spend time thinking about what they can do to move us forward and to improve opportunities and to start to combat racial inequality. And so that's what I think is actually really important about these types of conversations.
This is everyone's problem.
Right, exactly.
Here's an email from Kelly. She says, I like the move toward discussing the racial disparities, systems, and processes that propagate communal racism for people to better understand the system we don't see that keeps minorities at a different station in life. I wonder if applying the word racist when discussing the individual actions can cause people to be more defensive rather than fairly evaluating their bias, thoughts, behaviors to change how they interact and how they're able to advocate for changes in the larger system. Can your guests discuss the purposeful use of language? And Jessica, I'll let you talk about that first. I mean, we have this system of racism in our country, but racism and racist, these are words that are so hot in any kind of discussion. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think that we have to be open about what's going on in order to solve the problem. So if we can't talk about things that are, in fact, racist, that serve to maintain systems of oppression, then we cannot dismantle those systems of oppression. So we have to be able to use the language. And, in fact, being negatively impacted by racial inequality is much more severe than having an action be called racist or having racism being pointed out to you. So I think that's really important to keep in mind. And I understand that it's sensitive, but we have to really be serious about the severity of the problem. And we have to use that language to talk about the severity of the problem.
Now, Delasia, in your class, there was a safe space to talk about race. And obviously the conversation following the film tonight, there's going to be a safe space for people to talk about racism and to talk about racial inequality. Have you found a way, as a young person, to have these conversations outside of the classroom?
Definitely. I don't feel like as though I have to watch how I speak to people, as though what I say to them. So when I speak to others about these issues, I feel as though, like, I'm going to just put it out there and we're going to discuss it. Like, I don't feel as though I need to dance around the issue and expect an issue to be solved. So I think that's the biggest thing for me, language. Of course, I won't go out there to offend someone, but I will go out there with the purpose to talk about it and to get it solved and not to kind of sugarcoat it as though most people will.
Well, and Petra, I mean, it's great to talk about having these conversations with young people, but again, this isn't something that we've been tackling in our school systems for very long at all, if it's even being done today. So these are conversations that adults need to be having as well. I mean, there are a lot of adults who don't understand the system and haven't really come to terms with what racism is. From your experience, how do you have a conversation with adults? How do you start these conversations?
Usually I find it helps to have a common text that we're referring to. So we'll look at a blog or an article or a book that we're reading together. And from that, use that as kind of a place to bounce ideas off of. So it's not me responding to another human being and challenging their thoughts and where they're coming from, but using kind of the filter of that text to be a place where we can process what it is that we've been raised with or what our continued thinking is, places where we're being challenged, and then areas where we can grow in our understanding around race.
NOSA at Roosevelt High School, that's where the film is going to be shown. What are students saying today about tomorrow? There must be some buzz about this film and conversations.
Like Ms. Lang is sponsor of CORE for Advancement, and we have a CORE for Advancement at Roosevelt High School. We've tried to talk about the film for a while, and we've been having discussions about racism for about a time. But not everyone at Roosevelt actually knows that the film is being shown tomorrow. And I'm not sure why, but we have been advertising on Facebook and through word. But like I said, it's once again that awkward conversation that people try to avoid. So maybe by not mentioning it, it's not going to start a conversation in class. But I haven't heard very much about it within the students. Probably just close core friends know about it, and a few of our friends that are friends with core students.
Well, that's interesting. You know, Jessica was just talking about broadening the conversation, taking the burden away from people of color. They're not the only people that need to work on this problem in our culture. So go on.
No, you can keep going.
I was just going to say, is that a concern of yours that maybe students of color are the ones that are excited about this film being shown? They're the ones that are going to show up. Is there a problem getting the message out?
Getting the message out has been our biggest problem. In CORE right now, we have, I think we only had one or two white students in the, or non-minority students in the club. We've been having a lot of difficulties reaching out to students that are not minorities or students of color. And we kind of ask ourselves those questions too, you know, why don't they want to be a part of the conversation? And I think a few of them have mentioned that they kind of do feel attacked when we have these conversations. So it's just making them feel comfortable in the space so that they can understand that they have privileges that we can discuss and, you know, not ignore the conversation.
Well, and it's interesting listening to what NOSA's saying, Petra, because I think that in this film, they really did a really nice job of that. I mean, and I can imagine that it's a lot easier to sit in the dark and watch this film than to sit in a room and have everybody looking at your face and thinking about what your experiences and your thoughts might be. Is that part of your hope that this is a really non-threatening way to broaden this conversation?
I worry just a little bit about the non-threatening part, especially when we look at white folks who respond with that defensiveness or feel attacked. Because I think at some point it's just a discomfort that we have to enter, but doing it together in community, having folks join and sit next to each other and know that this is such an important thing for us to engage in conversation. I think that's where some of that difficulty can be overcome.
Well, Petra Lang, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it being here.
Petra Lang, Special Programs Coordinator at Drake University School of Education, Delasia Nix of East High School in Des Moines. We also talked with NOSA Ali of Roosevelt High School in Des Moines. The film will be shown tomorrow evening at 6 p.m. at Roosevelt.